College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you. We do apologize right out of the gate. We always think we're going to do something Masters week, and we're busy. We're busy. Not that we didn't want to, so it just kind of felt right going from Augusta National Women's Amateur to Drive Chip and Putt to the Masters out to Pasta Tiempo. We're both at home base, at least for the time being. So that seems like it was weeks ago, but we have reconvened in the postseason underway. A lot of conference tournaments we'll get to in just a little bit.
I think Masters week, you're right, it's super busy, but I don't know. I think we got to be more on the ball. I take full responsibility. By the time I thought about it, it was Saturday. And I'm like, well, that's too late. But on the men's side, it's a really busy time of the year. And, you know, maybe we should be a little bit better on the planning aspect of things.
We're human. We're human. But I know your Masters week finished up with a amazing opportunity. You got a chance to tee it up again.
Well, look, so I didn't want to rub it in to people who have never won the lottery. And so when people would come up and ask me on Sunday morning, oh, I hear you're playing. Is it your first time? And I'm like, yeah, never played before. But I did play 10 years ago. And is that the play, just to kind of be modest and not rub it in? Or is it bad to
I like that. Now, back in the day, once you got pulled, you were done forever.
So wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got 1998. I was able to play. And at that point, it was like, hey, you're one and done. And why would you ever argue? And then I heard through the years, oh, no, it's a 10-year waiting period. So the fact that you double dip, good for you.
Yeah, I think it's on your eighth year, you can re-enter now. And there was an extra year that I had to wait because of COVID. So I was back in it last year, didn't get it, and got lucky enough. So I'm 2 for 3 and played way better than I did 10 years ago. I played with Neil from No Laying Up, and he absolutely moves the ball. But I will always be able to hang my hat, Burko. Even par through 4 holes. Legitimate even par, birdie on 3, stuffed it, parred 11, parred the last 3 holes, and everything else will just, we just won't talk about the other holes. But yeah.
If it started with an 8, I think it's valid. Did it start with an 8?
It did. It did start with an 8. Yeah.
That's a win. That's a win. Good for you. And it's funny you say that. I only entered once in my very first time in 98. I got plucked. So how about that?
We're just lucky. I also made a Larry Mize par on the last hole, where you hit the tree, you got a 3-wood in, and just absolutely flushed the crap out of this 3-wood onto the green. Almost had it roll back down that shelf toward the hole, but was able to 2-putt. The putter was on fire. The putter was, I don't know if I missed many putts inside of 6-7 feet.
Which is what you need. Yeah, we hear it when we watch Rory and Scotty and everyone else. And a club caddy still, right? To sort of shepherd you around.
Yeah, I had a guy named Evan. It was funny. Neil had a guy, his caddy bib number was 69. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, just an all around enjoyable day. And there was another guy in our group, Francisco. He's from Golf Channel Latino America, and he could move it as well. But he cracked me up toward the end. It was about the 14th hole, and he goes, "Well, I guess we're all just going to have to go in and get a beer in the clubhouse afterwards." And I just kind of looked at my caddy, and we both started laughing because, look, it's a really great opportunity, and very fortunate that the club even lets us anywhere near the club on Monday morning, let alone to play. And I think I ended up saying, "Well, you know, Francisco, I think we're welcome to get a beer afterwards, but I think it's got to be across the street. You know, we don't need to be lingering and overstay our welcome. We just need to get our stuff and leave." But great day.
Good for you. Good for you. Then obviously before that, it seems like an eternity ago, Maria Jose Marin went in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You've got a reigning NCAA champ and clinical, clinical with how she went about it. And, you know, you, so many times you'll think of, Astra's tally. It was hers until it wasn't. The 12th hole has grabbed many through the years on that second nine, and it got her, plain and simple. And Maureen just went about her business from A to B to C. And you kind of knew, even though there were holes remaining, it was still close, in my estimation, once that happened. You were very unlikely to see Maria do something like that on those final five or six holes.
Yeah, it was so strange, too, to have it go so wrong for Asterisk on Golden Bell the first week. And then at the Masters, that was arguably the hole that won Rory McIlroy his second green jacket. But with Maria Morin, this is a player who, I don't know if overlooks the right word, because she's been a first-team All-American. She's been consistently ranked in the top 10 in both the amateur rankings and the college rankings these last couple of years, but maybe not quite the headlines of a Kiara Romero or a Mega Gane or some other players that are around her in those rankings. But this was just another one of those big tournaments that she's won. She's won the NCAA individual championship. Now she's won this. A supreme ball striker who can get pretty streaky with the putter at times too. And I'll tell you what, just a really cool sort of moment with her brother there at the end, Emilio, kind of holding his hand, walking through the crowd, and you know, kind of what family means to her, and the decision of her dad, who, you know, at times had been too involved in her golf game, for him to be able to take a step back, let the local firefighter, you know, father of five boys, take the reins and be the caddy, even into Saturday at Augusta. I mean, he had no experience there as well, but, you know, just seeing kind of that moment with the entire family, and you know, we've seen it a lot of years before too. This has become the best women's amateur golf tournament in the world, and it's one of those that I think everyone now growing up in the game dreams of winning.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Under the radar is probably a stretch, but we don't seemingly put her name in that conversation of one of the three, four, five best players. And she is. And I think that's just who she is as a person, a player, diminutive in stature. Her college season, she's yet to finish out of the top 10. I mean, you talk about a model of consistency. Finally won at Clemson before Augusta. She's great, plain and simple. You know, it felt like that Zach Johnson kind of Masters that you might not get wowed like Kiara Asterisk hitting it 280, 290, but at the end of the day, no one's beaten her.
She was like eighth in our little draft, I think. So
God, that was so far ago. Who had her is the question. I felt like I did, but probably not.
Yeah, you did, and I think you beat me again for that. I stopped counting after the first couple of days. Yeah, it was kind of a runaway, too, so it was easy to, because you had both Asterisk. I think you had Mayo Ortengren as well. So, I mean, this thing was over before we even got to Saturday.
Hey, you always have next year, my friend. It's always a possibility.
Hey, I got regionals coming up.
Yeah. There you go. That's the can-do attitude we're looking for. Before we get into deeper results, et cetera, some changes, some news in terms of portal dates, international players. Give us a quick summary of what's the latest.
Yeah, so transfer portal dates, it had kind of been maybe a point of contention amongst coaches, and in that the portal would theoretically open up early May for the women, kind of mid-May for the men, and you know, right during that national championship and NCAA postseason stretch. And it kind of puts, you know, not only players at mid-majors. I mean, we saw about Georgia Southern, remember last year when they make it to the NCAA championship, and oh, by the way, all of those players are in the portal. So The dates have been changed. I think this was something that was in the pipe for a while, but essentially women's portal is going to open on May 28th. I think that's the day after the NCAA championships, and it'll be open for about 2 weeks until June 11th, and then the men's are June 4th through 18th. So huge, huge news, great decision. And then secondly, this maybe pertains more to us and the tournament that Golf Channel hosts at St. Andrews every fall, but the international rule where you can only make one international trip every 4 years, that is no longer. You can now do one per year. So I think that will open up a lot of maybe some different programs who may have thought they weren't going to be able to go to St. Andrews. Now we could potentially have our pick of the litter for those fields.
Yeah, that I was aware of. Some coaches telling me that that was going to happen. So, you know, it seems logical. It seems like the right thing to do for college sports. So it's good to see that happening as well. Positive info, USC getting the job done. Fourth one of the year. We had a couple of 62s, the tournament scoring record in the 79-year history of that event. And it's not even the best round shot, because one of those that shared top billing, Dean Grazerman, shot 61 a couple of weeks ago. The course, the weather in the 6-7 years we've been doing it, perfect. Ideal, tough, but 18 didn't destroy too many people, at least the last few days.
I'll tell you what, just to be able to host a college event on a golf course like that, and obviously coming off the Masters, which is another McKenzie design, just the margin for error. I mean, you saw it, Berko. The ninth hole better now that they've sort of softened it. Balls don't quite run all the way off the green, but you're an inch away from having the ball funnel to 5 feet, and you're an inch away from having 50 feet and scrambling just to save par. So, I think it's an interesting design. I think it's no surprise that sometimes we see some different teams, and it may not go exactly off the rankings on how this leaderboard shakes out. And you look at a team like USC, and I talked to Mark Hankins, their head coach, on the phone for a little bit last night. They get to play Riviera quite a bit. They get to play LACC every other Thursday. They play some venues and some designs that are more intricate, like a Paso Tiempo. It's not just bang driver, hit it somewhere around the green, and if you miss, it's a pretty straightforward chip. You know, it's not dartboard golf like we see at many other tournaments around the country. So to me, a really huge statement. I'd argue that this is the biggest win in USC history since 2020. Remember when they won Southern Highlands and we had Chris Sambry on the podcast, and maybe about a week later, everything shut down because of the pandemic. And so Mark Hankins rebuilding this program like he's done throughout the years. I mean, you think about his stops at Texas Arlington and Iowa, Michigan State, Nebraska. He's turned a lot of these programs around. And he's doing it now with maybe some guys who, you know, weren't ranked highly in the world amateur golf ranking a year ago, and guys who have continued to get better. And I'll leave you with this stat too, Berko. Those six guys who represented them at Paso Tiempo in that 6-count 5 format, each one of those guys has been the low finisher at some point this season. So, I mean, talk about depth. They may not have a quote unquote like superstar, but this could be an interesting team if they're able to get a good regional bid and make it to the NCAA championship.
Yeah, that's a great note. Mark had shared that with me. And when I saw him in the parking lot, I think Monday, I was like, hey, good start, good year. So, yeah, it's what I do. I rebuild. You know, he's excited for those prospects. And of those six guys that played Paso Tiempo, none of them had ever been there before. Mark Hankins had never been there before. So how about that? This is a team, you're now on the cusp of the top 25. You get in the right regional. I think you see him at La Costa. Jack Buchanan can play. Jaden Dumdemaya can play. When your two best are sophomores, I could see them and UCLA. You know, those two LA teams that have been a fixture nationally for decades. And there was, you know, a little bit of a drop off, certainly trending in the right direction there. Some other men's results, Ford Collegiate, Texas by 11 over Auburn. Coyvan wins for the fifth time. Jackson, that is, to stay out. Auburn Jr. Has he locked up the Player of the Year awards? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. Unless somebody wins conferences, regionals, and NCAAs, how do you give it to anyone else? This guy's now putting together one of the great college seasons in recent memory. And if it continues a little bit more, you know, you might start talking about one of the great seasons ever, period.
And he's kind of done it different ways too. I think back as a freshman, he didn't win a whole lot. I think SECs or maybe right before SECs is when he got his first career win, but he didn't finish outside the top eight essentially the entire season. Last fall was a little bit rocky by his standards, a couple finishes outside the top 10, but you know, now that he's proven that he could beat all these guys, I mean, I think there's nothing left to accomplish other than winning an NCAA individual title. I mean, he's proven that he can beat his peers, and I think he's ready for the next level now. And I think about, I don't know who shared this story with me, but I guess back when Phil Mickelson had decided to go back to Arizona State after winning the Tucson Open, they asked him why? Like you've won NCAA championships, like you've done all this stuff. And he said, well, you know, I just wanted to go back for one more year and just prove that I could just beat these guys every single time out. And when I turn pro with them, have them look across from me and say, like, this guy's beating me.
We're done.
Yeah, like we're not going to win. We didn't beat this guy in college. We're not going to beat him now. And you know, for Jackson now to have like kind of a weight off his shoulders, having that PGA Tour card, but at the same time, like when you're that competitive, there's still a lot of pressure because everyone expects you to go out and win. Everyone expects you to never have a bad round, and for him to be able to basically do that, I think that's huge. And I don't think he's done winning. That's why I would say that this Player of the Year award, and we're talking about the Haskins and Nicholas, the Hogan, which encapsulates all results since the beginning of last year's NCAA championship. When you factor in those three top 11 finishes on the PGA Tour, I think it's four now. No one's coming close to him for the Hogan Award. He's going to win that going away in about a month's time. The only other guys I would say that have a chance as far as the college only Player of the Year awards, Ben James got one win. He could win, I guess, theoretically the next three.
It's at least a legitimate conversation.
Yeah. And Jackson, I think, would have to stumble in one or two of those, and especially at the NCAA championship where they would go head to head. Now, Christian Moss has three. Preston Stout, we'll talk about him a little bit later. He's at three wins. Those are probably the other three guys who have a shot. Everyone else probably just playing for first-team All-American honors.
Which is not a bad consolation prize.
Not a bad consolation.
You threw it out there. Again, the Longhorns, big win, double digits. Are they the best team going into the postseason? You know, I forget who I was talking to at Pasta Tiempo. And we've said it every week on College Golf Talk. About as wide open, you know, what? For a while, it was Auburn. Well, then Virginia was staring us in the face. Now Texas playing well. You've got Florida. You've got others. Right now, they're playing well, and I could change that answer next week. That, to me, there's not been a consistent 6, 8, 10-week stretch by any team, because everyone has had that drop-off or that week. Well, geez, how'd they finish sixth? You know, or what happened there? So on this day, I'll say yes, and I could easily change that answer next week.
Yeah, they're certainly on paper, they're deeper than everyone else, especially with Matthew Komagy's finishing third this week. If that's the kind of golf we're going to see out of him, they're going to be very tough to beat, especially in match play. Christian Moss is playing unbelievably. Tommy Morrison, you know, look, he's kind of tailed off a little bit this spring. He's been really inconsistent, but he has a lot of experience. I mean, he came to college a semester earlier. I think he was like 17 years old. I mean, he was 17 feet tall, but just 17 years old when he first got to college. And now he's a senior getting ready to turn pro. I think with Texas, it always just comes down to, just being able to have the, that little extra focus, that little extra maturity that we see from other teams, because they definitely have the talent. So it's just a matter of how do we make sure that we don't have an off week? How do we make sure that all five of us are hitting on all cylinders? Because if that happens, I think the numbers and the analytics would say that this is the team that should be the favorite. And, teams like Auburn, a little bit of a question mark at the back end of the lineup, even though Drake May, aka Jake Albert, he's taken a big step this spring, hasn't proven it yet on a postseason stage. Some other teams, like I think Texas Tech's a pretty sneaky team, LSU, but again, as you said, it's wide open, a lot of question marks. You can make just as much of an argument against all these teams winning it than you can for them.
Mountaineer Invitational, Clemson by 4 over Texas Tech and West Virginia. Oklahoma State, maybe surprising, tied for 4th, even though Preston Stout won. So you love seeing Stout step up, but then maybe you say, team that won it all last year, basically everything's back. You probably would not have seen that coming.
No. And not after watching Ethan Fang at the Masters, although you wonder, like, was there some sort of, because he played the event before that too, right? I mean, they played the Augusta event, and then he plays the Masters, and then he goes and, right to West Virginia and plays there too. So you got to think that that's just a matter of energy, for him to finish 47th. So, but I think I was walking with Bratton a little bit at the Masters, and he was just commenting on how well Ethan was hitting the ball. And so if that continues, I wouldn't be so much worried about this team. I think maybe you look at the team right underneath them on this leaderboard, Arkansas, which has been, I think, the most surprising team as far as, those who are in the top 10. They had their full squad. They didn't have anyone coming off playing in the Masters. I think they're probably leaving West Virginia feeling a lot more concerned about this finish than Oklahoma State is.
Other results, and speaking of Oklahoma State, former Cowboy Johnny Clark wins to help New Mexico pass Arizona State at the Thunderbird Collegiate. Utah finished 7th. Gabriel Palacios, their standout, really struggling since the LATNAM back in January in Peru. So Utah is always one of those teams you're like, okay, they're good. How good can they be? Obviously, you need Palacios to step up. A lot of other results. We'll quickly rip through them. Niall Shields Donegan winning for the Tar Heels leads UNC to a 20-shot win at home. Mossy Oak Intercollegiate, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, they tie 7 clear of Vandy. Tom Fisher and Dane Ritchie, Mississippi State, individual winners. The Lewis Chitengua Memorial, former Cavalier, that event played in memoriam of him. Cavs won by 13 over FSU. Paul Chang sharing top billing with William Sides from SMU, who's won a couple now. He's sort of trending in the right direction. Kentucky, they get the job done at home. 4-shot win at the Bluegrass Collegiate. Arkansas State, 38 clear of Houston Christian, that also at home. Look at you going deep. USC Aiken winning the Wofford Invitational by a half dozen over USF, and then the Golden Gophers of Minnesota, 9 clear of Ohio State, the Robert Kepler Invitational that in Columbus. So that's the men.
Told you it was busy.
Well, we
I probably left some out.
We didn't include
everything that we could have.
All right, women conference championships underway. UT Rio Grande Valley, for the first time, winning the Southland title by a shot. They're headed to the big dance for the very first go-around. Prairie View A&M, also a first-time regional qualifier, running away with the SWAC. Congrats to them. big ones on tap for the ladies. ACC's underway. Atlantic Sun starts today as we're doing this on a Friday morning. The Patriot League, Coastal Athletic Association, the Northeast, and then the SEC. So, I mean, it's here. We talk about the postseason, the most important 6 weeks of the year. Well, we're front and center. And as we take a look at the ACC going, you know, statistically, stroke-wise, Stanford will win by 5, 10, 15, 20. But as you know, and others think differently, they don't win anything. They just win the number one seed. They'll go to match play. And then the question is, and I think we still stand there, that Stanford has lost to more teams in match play this year than in stroke play. I think they've only lost to one team in stroke play, and they've lost two different events in match play. I can't see them losing. Doesn't mean they won't. But if someone could beat them in Wilmington at Porter's Neck Country Club, I'm going to say Duke.
Yeah.
Duke feels like the team with Rhian Mullixy now starting to play well pretty much all spring. They have just enough pieces, and you know who the wild card will be for that team, and I think their whole postseason run, their most seasoned veteran, Andy Smith. They need Andy Smith to play well. Excuse me. And then I think they could make a run. I think they can make a run all the way to match play at La Costa.
I like that pick. I was gonna go Wake. Wake's the team that obviously beat them both in stroke play and match play last fall at the Stevens Cup. But aside from Chloe Kovaleski, I think there's a lot that concerns me. A lot of players that haven't put the type of results together consistently that you'd like to see going in to this time of year. Since you already picked Duke, that leaves me with very little. But I'm going to go SMU. Just purely for the fact that, you know, Mackenzie Lee and Emily Odwin, both players who we saw at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, both really, you know, impressive talents. Mackenzie Lee has put together, you know, the type of 2-3 year career so far that's, you know, something to be proud of. And so that, you know, that's one that with the two horses there, I think SMU could maybe get hot, and then maybe one of their other three gets a little fortunate, and maybe they can take down the giant Stanford. But I don't know if Stanford's going to lose anymore this season, Burko. I'll just put that out there.
I think you might be right. Emily Odwin, what a delight. Got a chance to meet her at Augusta, interviewed her at Champions Retreat when she pars the last, gets to Augusta National, has a quick FaceTime with Ian Woosnam right there on the final screen from Barbados. They've had got a relationship. He's kind of guided her and truly a delight. So I like that play as well. The SEC women's underway. Just scrolling the leaderboard of who might win this. Before we say that, Mick Potter, longtime standout Alabama, just announced he'll be retiring at the end of this season, won a national championship with the Tide. I mean, he was there 21 years. I mean, I'm old because I remember when he coached at Furman. You think about, you got to be really old. If I'm not mistaken, Beth Daniel, Dottie Pepper, and I think Betsy King. Those were all players. Betsy, maybe not, but I believe at Furman. So you think of Mick Potter, true, I think an underrated, amazing longevity for one of the good guys in the game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, currently, and obviously no longer after this season, but the second longest tenured women's golf coach.
After Dan, you're saying it's Mick at 21 and Bama. Yeah. John Crook still at Campbell?
That's a good question.
I think he might have lapped them all, right? See, we think we know everything.
I saw this stat somewhere.
He's been at Campbell for 36 years with the men, but he may have stepped away from the women.
Well, he's been the head women's coach since 91.
Got it. So, yeah. So he served as the head women's, huh? That's what happens when you're old like me. You know these things. He's one of the longest tenured. Love Mick to death. Truly one of the greats. God, I'm challenged because I think there's about six teams that could win the SEC. You go first, since I stole your no-brainer in Stanford.
All right, I'm going to take the team that I think, even though they're not ranked the highest coming in, they're the second ranked team in the conference, but I'll go Texas.
You're killing me. Okay. Yeah.
Why? Were you going Texas?
I'm going Texas. I said it before Darius. We've seen what Fair is doing. We're seeing Lauren Kim. Still maybe slight concern in the 4-5 spot. Florida's pretty good. Arkansas is really good. Auburn. But I'm going to stay true. I'm going to say hook 'em horns, and we'll see if they get the job done.
Yeah, for me, with A&M, Vanessa Borvillos, Kata Fernandez, Garcia Pollo, again, this is kind of two-horse juggernaut, if you will. To me, they've had the most consistent season. I mean, Texas has been up and down. Florida is ranked third in the country, but I would argue that if you look strength of schedule-wise, probably hasn't put together the type of resume in terms of fields that they've beaten this season. So I don't know. I mean, just well-coached team. To me, everything just kind of lines up for A&M to get this. One other team to keep an eye on, though, South Carolina. One win over 500 entering this. Obviously, now on the women's side, you have to have a 500 or better winning percentage to qualify for an NCAA regional. So South Carolina, they are currently T9. Obviously, a lot of golf left. But if things were to end right now in a four-way T9, they would not qualify for an NCAA regional as, you know, what is currently the 23rd ranked team in the country. So they need a solo ninth or better. And we'll see if Kaylin Anderson's team can regroup and figure out something that they arguably haven't figured out all year. Ella Galitsky's been, massive disappointment, just considering her credentials coming into this season. I mean, she should be a player who's won, you know, two or three times this season and who has barely finished outside the top 10. So she should be contending every tournament out, and she just hasn't done that. And Darius, she got off to a great start, gave it all up coming in. I guess National Women's Amateur, not great.
Struggled early, battled back, but it never quite materialized.
Yeah, so that's something to watch out for. That would be a huge, huge miss there. But here's the thing, though. Speaking of South Carolina, and I think we need to dig in and get an answer to this before next week, and it might be moot if South Carolina finishes better or ninth or better, but if they don't, they have four players, Burko, who I think are in position to qualify individually for regionals.
Which would be remarkable, because we've only seen, I want to say, two from a team that didn't qualify ever get it. Maybe there was
three. There might have been three a couple of years ago, but certainly not four.
If you got four, you would think your team's good enough to be there.
And it should be, I guess. But here's the thing, too, is I've heard that the verbiage in the handbook might lead some interpretation to whether South Carolina would be able to play four count four and still qualify for the NCAA championship as a team.
Whoa.
How about that wrinkle?
Holy smokes.
Putting it out there, something to watch.
Giving us homework here. What's going on?
Yeah.
But we will figure that out if it matters. Before we wrap it up, it had been a while. Did you win your pool? Because I thought you said March Madness that you had a path if Michigan won it all.
I did. I won.
You're burying
the lead.
I won one
of the polls.
Uh-huh.
I needed Connecticut to not beat Duke, and I would have won the second pool. But how about this? The pool that I won.
Real quickly, hold on to the basketball. Still one of the, this is 2 years in a row, double-digit leads in big spots. Hold on to the, they couldn't get it out of their hands quick enough.
Do you blame that on Shire or do you blame it on, because what can you do as a coach in that situation?
Players win games.
Yeah.
Players win games.
And they lose games.
National Player of the Year could not get it out of his hands quick enough. Throws it to his brother, who couldn't get it out of his hands any quicker than hold the ball. Shire took the high road, and he said, well, we did have a timeout, too. Like, if you're just panicky, call a timeout. Credit to UConn. They shouldn't have been in the game. They were. They made the play. So I wish you would have won both pools. But needless to say, it's been a happy house here. In Northeast Ohio, as the Michigan flag was proudly outside the front yard. Obviously, my wife, a standout runner for the Wolverines back in the day. You think about it, the last 2 years between Florida, my alma mater, and Kate's alma mater, hoops have been good. It's been a lean year or two in the football world, more for the Gators, but that will be good. And then we're going to head to Columbus tonight, enemy territory. My oldest and me, to see the Michigan-Ohio State lacrosse game because he's got a lacrosse tournament in Dublin tomorrow. So we will be outnumbered again. There's nothing better than my 12-year-old when you hear the coach at practice say, remember, we're going to wear our white jerseys when we go to the game. And he's like, well, I'm wearing my Michigan stuff. So at least he understands it.
He's not scared. He doesn't have
to. No, he's not scared. No. He might want to be scared. Well, luckily, it's not football. It's lacrosse. And I'm going to brag. I'm going to take him to the Jesse Owens Field, where they, I believe, run track and field there in Columbus for the Buckeyes, because that's where they have the Hall of Fame for Ohio. And we're going to go look at the plaque of 2017 so he can see his mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
She's awesome. Never been. I took a picture the following year after her induction, and they put it on the Hall of Fame, Wall of Fame, and I've scrolled through the phone. And I said, yeah, gosh, I checked it out. And so I said, you know what? We're going to go see Mommy's name up there as one of the all-time greats ever to come out of the state.
Where's your name?
I give my wife credit because she didn't have to. It is her maiden name and her married name.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They asked and she said, you can put both names. Because, you know, a lot of people, if you put Kate Berkowski, they'd be like,
they have no idea.
Yeah. And back in the day, she went by Katie. So it's Katie Radkowicz Berkowski. Because, yeah, if you said Kate Berkowski name wise, people probably wouldn't connect. So I said, you don't have to do that. She said, yes, I do. So it made me feel good because that's the closest I'll ever get my name on that Wall of Fame.
I was wondering, though, where your name was somewhere in the country. You know, any wall in Gainesville or?
Oh, no. Let's see. It's up there somewhere. What year was that?
You got a degree at some point.
Yeah, I got a degree. The good folks. Only because you're asking. I won the Bill Eschenbrenner Award in 2018 at the All-American Classic that they had for decades in El Paso. That's sort of like the pandemic things changed. I need you every year. Bill Eschenbrenner, the founder of that tournament, longtime sort of mentor, instructor of Lee Trevino, they would honor the Eschenbrenner Award for someone, you know, contributions to the game. And it was always weird because they were kind enough to, when I was there, I'd MC the festivities. And they'd give me the rundown, and you call this guy and this, and then I'm like, oh, there's nothing for the Eschenbrenner Award. And they're like, oh, no, don't worry about it. We're going to do that this year. So, okay. So then you sit down and then they go up. And about 30 seconds in, I realize why I wasn't announcing the Eschenbrenner Award. So that pales in comparison to the multiple halls of fame that my better half is in. So maybe one day, you know.
Well,
I'm not sure I've done anything to
no. Oh, well, come on. Some people would argue otherwise, but I'm off to Oklahoma for something special. We'll be able to talk about that pretty soon. And then late call to the bullpen, Burko. I'm doing TV for the Zurich Classic next week. So,
I mean,
you're busy.
What are we doing? Are we reporting from Zurich?
Reporting, yeah.
Holy smokes, Brentley Romine.
See you, college golf. Waving out the window. I'm
just kidding. Love it. Well deserved. Well deserved. That's your first go around, right?
Well, why?
Full time PGA Tour reporter for the week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interviews on a broadcast.
And we have Nick Dunlap and Gordon Sargent as a team. We're going to run it back, Walker Cup in St. Andrews when they ignited the second day charge on Sunday morning.
Charge. Good for you. Good for you. Man, oh man.
We're just all living the life.
Almost joined you on that broadcast. Scheduling wise, it didn't work out to call holes.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, that would have, oh my gosh, we would have taken over the show. They might have thrown us out.
Yeah, I mean, we would have been talking about Tom Hoagie's college career at some point.
Sure,
on Friday afternoon.
TCU, right? You know, a little horn frog back in the day.
Bill Montego on the horn.
Oh, big Bill. All right, we're off the rails. Yes, that should be an exclamation point. We're back. We'll run it through all the way to La Costa. Appreciate you, as always, for tuning in to this edition of College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Burko. We'll do it again next week.